Thursday, June 14th, 2412. Decepticon Force Blue Headquarters. Erevex Wasteland, Cybertron. Decepticon War Games, Day 2. Megatron stood and examined the strategic situation, as far as his scouts could report it, on the planning table in the middle of his headquarters camp, then nodded with satisfaction.
"Everything is in place," he mused aloud. "It's time to shake things up a bit."
Then he ordered,
"Feedback. Send to game control. Proceed to phase 3.
"Roger," feedback replied. Then, after a short pause, he went on, "Game control acknowledges. Red team acknowledges. Phase 3 is underway."
"Excellent."
Megatron turned to Onslaught.
"Prepare your battle plans for an assault on the Red encampment. I want a preliminary tactical analysis within the hour."
Onslaught nodded. "As you command, Megatron," he said, and turned to his work. Satisfied, Megatron left the command post, passed the sentry at the camp gate, and made his way to the far edge of Blue Territory, where there was a mostly intact building of sufficient height to allow him a strategic overview of most of the battle zone from the roof. Standing boldly at the edge of the roof, as if daring any Red sniper who might be out there to try him, Megatron scanned from one side of the horizon to the other, taking in the whole ruined sweep of Erevex. Then, as if addressing the district itself, he said,
"You may as well show yourself, human."
There was a brief pause. Then a young woman emerged from behind a bit of rubble at the back of the roof, her face smudged with a combination of camouflage paint and dirt from spending 2 days living rough in a barren wasteland.
"How long have you known?" she asked.
Megatron turned his head to regard her. He had rarely seen a human being this close up, at least one who wasn't fleeing from his mechanical wrath. This one was female, dressed in a dark blue coverall with mid-calf brown boots, elbow and knee pads, and a heavy pistol of some kind holstered at her left hip. Her hair was a rusty red and mostly tucked under a soft cap that matched her uniform. Even confronted directly by the autocrat of all the Decepticons, she didn't seem to be afraid, just interested. This was a new sensation for Megatron. He'd never known a human to find him interesting. Terrifying, yes. That had rather been the idea during the time he'd spent trapped on their homeworld, but not interesting.
"My sensors detected you some time ago," he told her. "Your exothermic little spark shows up very distinctly against the background of this cold, dead sector."
The woman shrugged philosophically, took a cloth from one of the pouches on her belt, and started cleaning the camo paint off her face.
"So much for that idea," she remarked.
Under the camouflage makeup, her face had a pleasing symmetry about it, not too different from a Transformer woman's, come to that. Zooming his optics, he took a closer look, noting the International Police Organization star on her cap and the name tape above the breast pocket of her jumpsuit, and matched them against what he'd learned of the human organizations of this era during his historical researches before the games.
"Morgan," he mused. "Not K. Morgan."
She blinked, startled by the sudden mention of her mother, and realized Megatron's mistake and laughed.
"No, but you're close," she said. "My name's Pris. K is my mother. At least..."
She hesitated, looking a little downcast.
"I hope she still is," she added quietly.
Megatron looked perplexed.
"I don't understand."
Hoping she wasn't about to have to explain sexual reproduction to a giant robot, Pris elaborated,
"Mother. Female parent?"
"Yes, I know what a mother is,"
Megatron replied, just a trifle testily.
Why do you say you hope she still is? Surely one's mother is always one's mother.
Oh. Well, I... Pris shook her head. Forget it. You don't have time for this. I didn't intend to get underfoot. Megatron thought for a moment, then sat down on the edge of the roof, his feet hanging over the edge, and said casually,
I've known humans to get underfoot in my time. Not literally, you understand. Contrary to popular belief, few Decepticons ever went in for that particular sport. Too messy and inefficient.
He seemed to realize that he'd wandered a bit and recalled himself to the present.
As it happens, I have the best part of an hour to kill just at the moment. If I've said something to trouble you, the least you can do is give me a chance to remedy the situation.
Pris stared at his back for a moment. Had the Decepticon Supreme Commander just apologized to her? Then crossed the roof, climbed up onto some rubble near the edge, and sat facing his profile. It's okay, she said. You couldn't be expected to know. My mom's missing. She has been for 3 years now. Disappeared on a mission to the Rim. Most people think she's dead. I'm not so sure, but... She blew out a sigh. I was going to spend this summer chasing some leads. Instead, I got sent here for mecha training. And then Shockwave happened, and then you happened. Megatron frowned.
How often our actions have consequences we never could have foreseen, he mused. Is that why you've been following me?
No, Pris replied. I've been following you because... She paused as it occurred to her that she had no articulable idea why she'd been following him. She just had, because it seemed like something she had to do. Ever since she first saw him, marching battered but defiant at the head of his reclaimed army to the gates of Vilnicron, and almost playfully challenging Optimus Prime, she'd been fascinated with the idea of this ancient and dreaded warrior returning across unimaginable distances to his homeworld. Not to conquer, apparently, but to reclaim a legacy she only dimly understood. Watching the ancient holorecords of his greatest battles, Pris thought she had seen something noble in his earliest appearances, when he fought for Cybertron and not himself. Her father had taught her early on that everyone who had fallen deserved a chance to rise again, if he wanted it and was willing to fight for it. But that wasn't it either, and it certainly was nothing she could put into words right now. So she fumbled for a few moments, trying to come up with a way of even understanding what she felt, never mind expressing it. Then, all at once, and without her conscious consideration, the words spilled out. I don't even fucking know. I can't figure it out myself, unless it's just that you have that bastard utter confidence that makes me feel that what I'm trying to do isn't impossible. Then she turned her back to him, drawing her knees up and resting her chin on them, and looked out over the ruins to the south with tears tracking her cheeks. She felt suddenly very small and ridiculous. Megatron sat silently for a moment, wondering, A, what just happened? And B, why do I care? He was about to essay some attempt at conciliation, never his strong suit, when he caught movement in the distance out of the corner of his optic and turned back to the east. Off upon the far horizon, a group of aircraft, no more than specks at normal magnification, had just crossed the boundary of the wasteland and were approaching rapidly. Next to him, Pris turned, her misery erased by wariness. Fusion turbines, she said, and Megatron was impressed. His own audio receptors had just picked up the sound, and he would have bet on their being more sensitive than a human's ears. She got to her feet, taking her collapsible binoculars from her belt, and took a closer look. Uh-oh. Megatron rose, zooming his optics on the approaching aircraft.
They were near enough now that he could see they were Transformers. Some of them, anyway. But not ones he would have expected to see here. He recognized some of them as they approached. The sleek, purple and gray fighter craft known as Cyclonus, another fighter of the same model in gray. The blue and white hovercraft forms of Scourge and his sweep minions. There were other fighters of a type superficially similar to Cyclonus, with forward-swept wings, but quite different in detail. He'd never seen those before. But what really caught his attention was the one in the lead. Flying in the formation's van was a large, purple-hulled ship, comparable to some types of later-model Decepticon shuttlecraft in its overall design. It had a long, sleek nose, over-the-hull angular wings, and large cylindrical engines under the middle wing joints. There were also long, ovoid orange cannons jutting forward from the ship's wing roots. It was that last feature that rang the loudest bell, that and the overall color scheme. As he watched, the lead craft and the gray Cyclonus type peeled away from the rest of the formation and approached his position.
"You had better find cover, human,"
Megatron advised, his optics fixed on the approaching craft. "I have a name, remember?" Pris grumbled as she drew her sidearm, wondering what possible good it could do her, and climbed down from her rubble perch. Megatron ignored her and jumped down from the building's roof, cratering the street as he hit the ground. A moment later, the two approaching vehicles swooped down from the sky and alighted at the other end of the block, transforming to robot mode as they did. Megatron paid Cyclonus's gray twin, who merely folded his arms and stood glowering anyway, little mind. All his attention was focused on the other as he transformed to land. His large engines swung out and back, becoming powerful cylindrical legs. The entire wing assembly swiveled clear around, bracketing the large Transformer's barrel chest from behind, and blocky arms deployed from his sides. The two ovoid cannons were now shoulder-mounted, and they framed a crowned face that was shockingly familiar, for all that Megatron had only seen it in archival footage. The rest of his design was different, but there were enough similarities to mark a striking resemblance to one long thought dead. And the face was the same. Megatron narrowed his optics.
Galvatron.
Avery Productions Unlimited and Imagination Unlimited present Undocumented Features Future Imperfect, Transformers, Cybertron Reloaded, Issue Number 6, Adapt and Survive. By Benjamin D. Hutchins, hi, that's me, and Philip Jeremy Moyer with Jeff Depew. Pris abseiled down the last of the ruined tower's stairwells, retracted her wrist grapple, and took up a tactical position just inside the street entrance, her shoulders pressed against the wall, looking out around the edge of the empty doorway. She tried to call for backup, but got only static, and she didn't have the war game team's freaks. Sylvie could have conjured them out of the ether somehow with her Cortana, but such matters were outside Pris's sphere of expertise, and normally interest as well. Unable to think of any other plan, she remained where she was, out of sight, though what Megatron had said earlier about her heat signature, that was presumably what he'd been talking about, stuck in her mind. Watching. She'd wanted to see Megatron in action personally, after all. Now it looked like she might get her chance.
"Hail, Megatron," Galvatron said, his voice the same as it had been in the earliest of the history files Megatron had scanned. Deep and resonant, measured, steady. What he said next, though, startled the Decepticon leader even more than his mere appearance on the scene.
"I bring you greetings from our dreadlord Unicron, the All-Devouring."
Megatron stared at him.
"What?"
he murmured, his voice barely audible.
"He was most surprised to learn from your transmission to the Autobots that you still function," Galvatron went on matter-of-factly.
"What?"
Megatron repeated, slightly louder, his fists clenching.
"In tribute to your resilience,"
Galvatron continued. He offers you this one last chance to redeem yourself for your insolence when last you were in the presence. Megatron's optics blazed.
What?
He repeated a third time, louder still. Doom comes to Cybertron, Galvatron told him. My mission is to notify the children of Primus that our dread lord approaches, and to demonstrate the futility of resistance by making an example of the Prime who presumed to oppose him 4 centuries ago. I am commanded to offer you this one chance. Join me in this divine errand, and you will survive the apocalypse to come. Galvatron folded his arms across his barrel chest and smiled complacently at his template. What say you, Megatron? For a second or two, Megatron stood so still he might as well have been a mere statue, his face utterly impassive. Then, calmly, he replied,
I say...
With a speed and decisiveness that took even Galvatron aback, the Decepticon commander raised his right arm and blasted Galvatron's gray-clad companion straight through the chest with a full-power shot from his fusion cannon. The blast shattered its target's plastron, sending his already collapsing wreckage flying back into the structure behind him, which, being an ancient fuel storage tank filled with the fumes of its long-exhausted contents, exploded in a towering fireball upon the fiery wreck's impact.
No,
Megatron concluded. The explosion threw Galvatron face first to the ground. Struggling upright, he looked back over his shoulder in shock and cried,
Armada!
Then he turned a look of pure fury on Megatron and scrambled upright, snarling,
Fool! Unicron's favor is wasted on you. Very well, I shall make you the first example.
It's you who'll be an example, Galvatron,
Megatron replied.
An object lesson for your master in what happens to those who threaten Cybertron.
With that, Megatron leaped, tackling Galvatron to the ground.
Ah!
Galvatron cried, kicking Megatron off him.
Miserable scrap! I'll teach you to lay a hand on Galvatron the Almighty!
The two cannons on his shoulders swung downward, aiming at Megatron, and opened fire. Staggered bolts of particle beam fire raved out. Megatron dodged, throwing himself flat to the ground, and narrowly avoided Galvatron's fusillade. This was a good thing, as the blast slagged the entire ground floor of the building behind him, causing it to collapse in a heap. Undaunted, Megatron rolled onto his back and sprang to his feet in one fluid motion. With a mighty bellow, he returned fire, blasting a hole clean through one of Galvatron's wings.
Galvatron!
He roared.
One shall stand, one shall fall.
At 30,000 feet above the same general area, General Patricia Terror Courier and Starscream had just noticed that all communications outside the Aravec sector had failed, when their day, already strange, got much stranger. Off to the southeast, just on the horizon, a sudden flash so bright it momentarily washed out the starlight above, lit up the broken landscape of the wasteland, and in its wake a column of flame-shot smoke boiled up out of the shattered streets of Aravex. What in the hell was that? Terror wondered.
I'm not sure, Starscream said.
Then, without changing his tone of voice at all, he added,
Perhaps we could ask them.
Terror looked and saw a group of perhaps a dozen aircraft heading their way. Her threat computer identified half of them immediately. Decepticons, Cyclonus, and Scourge, 4 of Scourge's identical sweeps. But the other 6, all identical, were of an unknown type.
Somehow I find myself doubting that Cyclonus and Scourge are interested in being part of Megatron's new order,
Starscream mused, a suspicion that was given weight a moment later when the approaching formation opened fire.
You may take Cyclonus, General, and welcome to him,
Starscream told her with a virtual wink.
Scourge is mine.
What about the rest of them? Terror asked wryly as Starscream broke formation and, afterburners blazing, swept out in a wide arc to engage the oncoming group on the left.
They'll just have to fend for themselves, Starscream replied.
That's not really what I meant, Terror grumbled, but she was talking to a blank screen. Then she smirked slightly. What the hell, he had a point, and winged over to engage Cyclonus.
Fool!
Scourge snarled as the battered maroon and black jet dove on him, blazing away with wing and fuselage cannons. He rolled away from the volley, put on more speed, and returned fire. The interloper evaded his blasts, maneuvering with an almost insolent ease, and Scourge got his first inkling that this might not be as trivially easy as he had assumed. As a creation of Unicron, Scourge was accustomed to being far more powerful than ordinary Transformers, especially antiques like this one appeared to be, but this ancient Sky Soldier seemed to be just as fast as he was, and possibly even more maneuverable.
You know, Scourge, there's something I've always wondered, Starscream remarked conversationally as he avoided another volley of cannon fire. Just what is your vehicle mode supposed to be, anyway? I didn't think you Unicron spawned had alternate modes inspired by earthly things, but the only thing I can think of when I look at you is a bar of soap.
Insolent scrap, Scourge replied.
I cannot in good conscience dispute either point,
Starscream conceded mockingly. He reversed course with a suddenness that should have been enough to tear his wings off, doubling back and streaking between Scourge and one of the sweeps so fast that the minion nearly tagged his master instead of the target with his wild burst of fire.
Bah! Scourge growled. Sweeps! Away! I will deal with this one myself. Go and see how Lord Galvatron fares.
Ho-ho! Starscream observed. Lord Galvatron, is it? I suppose if I were Unicron, I'd attend to the wisdom in always mounting a scratch flunky, too. And what brings him to this quiet sector?
Scourge ignored him, settling into the grim silence in which he typically pursued his prey. It was just as well. Starscream had forgotten, in the centuries since he'd last encountered Unicron's huntsman, how his voice grated on the audio receptors, and he wanted to concentrate. Needed to concentrate, because for all that Starscream mocked him, Scourge was very, very good at his job. Good enough that it took all of Starscream's skill, as limited by the ragtag shell he inhabited, to lead him a merry chase across Aravex. He wasn't doing this just to be irritating. Rather, he hoped that by getting Scourge fully engaged, as it were, by playing on his capacity for all-excluding focus, he could lure the hunter out of the exclusion zone his side had apparently set over the Aravex sector. Get him out where the Autobots' planetary monitoring systems could see him. He'd just received confirmation that he'd accomplished his self-imposed mission, in the form of renewed comm contact with Iacon and the sound of the crowd back at ComSend's shock as they recognized Scourge, when his much-abused body finally reached its limit and betrayed him to the hunter's guns. Scourge's cannon fire laced both wings and his portside engine, filling his empty cockpit with the pointlessly reproduced sound of alarms. But they'd come far enough. Starscream urged all the power he could get out of his faltering flight systems, belting his protesting airframe through a split S that put him on an opposing course to Scourge's again. He pulled up, struggling for every last bit of climb he could get. With one engine out and his aerodynamic surfaces in tatters, he wasn't going to remain airborne much longer. But Scourge was diving in for the kill like the obsessive pinhead he was, putting himself right where Starscream wanted him. The next exchange of fire offlined his portside engine entirely, shredded both wings, and reduced his empennage to a pair of smoking stumps. But it also holed Scourge's fuselage in several places and wrecked one of his anti-gravity pods. Both of them had nowhere to go now but down. Autobot ComSend, Iacon. Alexis T. Dang watched in silent horror as Starscream's flaming silhouette plunged into the canyons of Altahex and disappeared from view, followed a moment later by the crippled but less obviously wrecked form of Scourge. Around her, the Technobots, Red Alert, Soundwave, and Blaster all scrambled to mobilize various forces to meet this newly revealed threat. But Alexis ignored all their activity, her attention wholly focused on the monitor that showed, dimly in the distance, the thin column of smoke still rising from the crash site. "Hey," Sylvie Daniels said, startling her out of her reverie. "You okay?" Alexis wrangled herself back to the here and now, blinking away incipient tears.
"Yes, I'm fine, Agent Daniels. Thank you."
Sylvie looked thoughtful, as if she didn't buy it and was about to say so. But then all she said was, "I'm not even going to ask where you know Starscream from. I know from experience that kind of thing is always a long story," she added with a wry tilt of her head towards Soundwave's back.
"Hmm," said Alexis, who didn't really want to discuss it. "I'm sorry, but..."
"Yeah," Sylvie replied, nodding. "It's cool." She clapped the slightly older woman on the shoulder and added, "I'm busy too. But, you know, later on, if you wanna, I'll be around." Then she went back down to the lower level, cabling up to Rumble's console with the new barrier collar she'd left the room to retrieve, and Alexis wondered for a moment what just happened before returning her attention to the monitor. Aravex. At 19, Priscilla Tally Morgan had seen things most people never saw. She was a rated getter machine pilot and a graduate of the World's Welfare Work Association Academy, a weapons expert, the daughter of two of the galaxy's most famous writers of wrongs. She grew up in a house full of martial artists, seekers after truth, and action heroes. One of her elder brothers was a Norse god, and the other was, or soon would be, a Jedi Knight, while her own twin brother Guy was held by some to be some kind of warrior of prophecy in another dimension. It all got a bit confusing. The point was, she really had seen attack ships on fire off the shoulder of Orion, if by the shoulder of Orion you meant Betelgeuse, really had watched sea beams glitter in the dark near the Tannhauser Gate. She'd grown accustomed to seeing epic things happen with slightly alarming regularity as a kid, had even, in some ways, started to think that she might be getting just a little bit jaded. And then something like what she was now witnessing would come along and remind her that she really didn't know Jack. Whereas there had been no question of the outcome of Megatron's battle with Shockwave, and his combat with Optimus Prime had been a relatively good-natured measure of strength between the two commanders, his duel with Galvatron, and there was no better word for it, was a fight that had no equal for sheer bitterness. Even his final clash with his adoptive father, Scorponok, for the leadership of the Decepticons had not been as brutal as this. No quarter was asked here, and none given. The two powerful Transformers grappled, punched, fired, dodged, jumped, and occasionally flew around the shattered Tower forecourt that made up their dueling ground. Distantly, Megatron's audio sensors registered the sounds of battle elsewhere, but he paid no attention to them, nor did he spare a thought for the young human who crouched behind a particularly large block of rubble, her laughably puny sidearm in hand, and watched the battle with rapt attention. There was only the fight, only this snarling, smirking parody of himself, only the overriding need that one or the other of them must be extinguished before the survivor could hold his head up again. Megatron remembered, with more than a twinge of embarrassment, whining to Optimus Prime for mercy in their duel at Autobot City, then using one of Prime's own warriors as his shield and taking his cowardly shot with a scavenged blaster pistol. That was why his spark had given such a lift when he saw Prime emerge, more powerful than ever, from the gates of Iacon 2 weeks prior. If he had slain his old foe forever with such a pathetic display, he might never be able to look himself in the optic in an inspection reflector again. Not for the first time, he wondered what had ever brought him to such a pass. Even at the height of his own cruelty, in the fire and sword days of the First War, Megatron would have shot any officer of his who behaved in such a disgraceful fashion, never mind stooping to such lows himself. It came to him as he considered this, with the small corner of his processor that wasn't occupied with the battle itself, that the creature he now fought had been based on an imprint of him taken by Unicron on that very day, the lowest, most pathetic day of Megatron's very long life. The thought rankled, raising a faint taste of scorched coolant at the back of his intake manifold. The very idea that the all-consuming should have been able to look into his inner being that way, then map what he found onto this chimera, was almost too much for Megatron's pride to bear. As was the fact that he seemed to be taking the worst of the battle with his duplicate now. Oh, Galvatron was battered, surely, but Megatron could feel a dozen wounds or more scattered about his own chassis, a shoulder joint partly sprung, armor plates buckled by blows from the imposter's undeniably mighty fists, a handful of sparking rents and tears in his superstructure. Shockwave had scored a couple of hits, but the main wound had looked worse than it was. Every time Galvatron hit his mark, on the other hand, it did more harm than showed. Megatron had to acknowledge that his opponent today might actually be more powerful than he was. But power wasn't everything. Templated from his own, it might be, but the bulk of Galvatron's combat knowledge was programming, not experience. And the difference told as Megatron seized him in a crystallocution hold he'd learned in ancient days, shattering one of the cannon barrels on his shoulders, and flung him across the street into the facade of a ruined building. The structure, already weakened by the fuel tank explosion Megatron had caused at the beginning of the battle, collapsed altogether, burying his foe in jagged wreckage. High above, the sweeps closed on the combat zone, intending to dive in and support their master's master. They cared nothing for the ancient dueling code, even if they had known Megatron had invoked it. But as they approached, they were suddenly intercepted. Thundercracker to all Decepticons! I am invoking emergency code Daleth-Niner-02-TAV! Suspend the game! Megatron is under aerial attack by outside forces! All air units, converge on my locator. This is not a simulation. The urgency in the Red Team Commander's voice, and the special code he had invoked, convinced Onslaught, the ranking member of Blue in Megatron's absence, that he was serious. And since hesitation had never been among the Combaticon leader's faults, he dispatched Blue's Sky Soldiers instantly to repulse the attack. So it was that the sweeps found themselves set upon by at least a dozen Decepticon jets. "Woo-hoo!" Sideslip cried as he corkscrewed away from a sweep's cannon fire and raked another with his lasers. "It's about time we saw some real action." "This might be a little too much action," Slipstream remarked. "These guys were supposedly created by Unicron." "Ha! Are you seriously saying you think they're more than we can handle?" Sideslip asked. "No," Slipstream replied patiently. "Just that we might have to, you know, think." "Ow! Okay, yeah, you have a point," Sideslip conceded as his starboard wing picked up a few holes. "I set 'em up, you knock 'em down?"
"Just leave a few of them for the rest of us, youngsters," said Baffle sardonically.
"Thundercracker, this is Jetfire," the Autobot Air Guardian called on the agreed-upon Overwatch frequency. "The aerial bots and I can be there in..."
"Negative," Thundercracker cut him off, his tone crisp but impersonal. "Some of my bots haven't had time to reconfigure their IFF yet. Primus knows what could happen if we all start throwing guided weapons around. Keep clear." Jetfire's reply was equally professional.
"Understood."
"Skywarp to Thundercracker. I've spotted Cyclonus. He's fighting, someone. One of us, I think, but I don't recognize him."
"Well, whoever it is, he's in over his head if he's taking on Cyclonus one-on-one.
Thundercracker replied. Are they within teleport range?
Affirmative.
Teleport and engage. Skywarp hesitated for the barest instant. It was long since he'd been used to this sort of decisive action from his colleague, then smiled to himself at the pleasant surge of nostalgia that tone and Thundercracker's voice brought back and replied,
On my way!
Galvatron's prison of wreckage didn't hold him long. He reared up out of the rubble, scattering fragments in all directions, and hurled himself at Megatron in a jet-assisted leap. Sweeping one massive fist in a blow that was meant to take the Decepticon commander's head off. Megatron threw himself back, avoiding that fate, but Galvatron's fist struck his fusion cannon instead, shearing it off and leaving a sparking rent in his right forearm where its hard point had been. Megatron roared in pain and fury, knocked off balance by the impact, and fell to hands and knees, shaking his head as he tried to shrug off the shock. Smirking, Galvatron approached with slow, even steps, retracting his right fist and deploying a glittering blade with a glowing purple energon edge in its place. Reaching down, he placed its point under Megatron's chin and levered his head up until the Decepticon leader's still unfocused optics met his own, then deftly reversed it so that its edge lay against the back of Megatron's neck, sizzling gently against the sloped armor.
It's over, Megatron, he intoned.
Megatron thought of Autobot City again, and this time, despite his situation, he smiled just a little at the memory. His splayed hands scraped together on the battered steel ground and clasped together into a double fist the size of a wrecking ball. For an instant he seemed to go entirely still, his consciousness falling into the center of his spark, as his crystallocution master had taught him in the ancient times. Then he rasped,
Never!
And brought his fists up in a titanic coupled blow that shattered Galvatron's blade and sent the Herald of Unicron flying. Of the last 160 hours or so, Pris estimated that she'd spent at least 20 watching footage of Megatron in action, from his last battle in 2005, all the way back to his days in Quintesson-occupied Vilnicron, when as a young army officer he had been punished for insolence with a turn in the Vilnicron arena, as though being forced to fight was punishment to a warrior as thoroughgoing as Megatron had been even in those days. She recognized instantly that he had quoted Optimus Prime's own response when Megatron himself had made that same remark to him at Autobot City, and wondered whether, like Prime, he would follow it by collapsing, his spark guttering like a candle flame. Altihex. Scourge was on foot. He wasn't quite as pathologically opposed to this condition as, say, Jetstorm, but he couldn't be said to appreciate it either. So it was with hate in his spark that he stalked the old sky soldier who'd brought him to this pass, blasters in hand. The fool was leaving a trail a Sharkticon could follow, much less the Huntsman of Unicron. That last exchange must have severed an energon line, and the glowing smears on the ground were easier to follow than a well-marked highway. In fact, judging by the trail, the same injury that was making the foe so easy to track might well do the rest of Scourge's job for him. But Scourge had to be sure. He didn't know who his elderly enemy was, but he wanted the head for his trophy wall anyway. No one had so much as laid a beam on Scourge in decades. He turned a corner, following the trail with the dogged persistence that Unicron had encoded in his very CNA, until he reached its end, only to find that it terminated against the blank wall of a blind alley, a metallic box gulch amid Altihex's canyons of steel.
What?
Scourge wondered, then turned to see his foe smirking at him from the entrance to the alley. The ancient was still leaking, energon trickling down from his shattered shoulder to drip from the fingers of his slack left hand. The wreckage of the fusion turbine built into that arm was still smoking, yet he looked gleeful somehow. As well he might, Scourge supposed, since he'd successfully fooled one of the galaxy's greatest trackers,
But why had he thrown away the time that Gambit had bought him and confronted Scourge directly?
"Well," the Sky Soldier remarked, still smirking, "we meet again."
Scourge surveyed his strangely pleased enemy, then his own mouth quirked in a cruel half-smile as he again noted the Sky Soldier's injuries and selected a weapon that would take the most painful possible advantage of them.
"I must congratulate you, stranger," he said formally. "You have led me a harder chase than any prey these last 100 years and more."
The ancient smirk became even, if it's possible, smirkier.
"You don't know who I am, do you?"
he said, and it wasn't really a question.
"No," Scourge replied, "and what is more, I don't care. Farewell, stranger. You will be remembered, albeit namelessly, with honor."
And then, snarling triumphantly, he shot the ancient with a phosphorus charge, setting his fractured superstructure irrevocably ablaze. With his fuel line still leaking, it would only be a matter of a few moments before the flames reached them, then raced back along them to detonate his remaining energon stores. There was no possibility of escape or survival. The ancient seemed to know that, but he also didn't appear to care. He didn't fall, didn't scream, didn't even look particularly bothered. Instead, as the rigid patch on the right side of his face fell away and revealed the scarred and half-melted plating beneath, he grinned even more broadly. And then, his face switching to a furious scowl, he spread his hands apart, his elbows still against his sides, and opened his upper chest munitions bays to reveal that, in addition to his remaining energon, he still had live armaments aboard. Stamping his foot once, the scarred, blazing Sky Soldier burst into motion, charging straight for Scourge on foot and leaving a comet trail of blazing energon and molten armor in his wake. Panic seized Scourge's spark as he looked left, then right, realizing that with his anti-gravity systems partially destroyed, there was no way he could scale these walls. Just as he reached that conclusion and turned to make a last-ditch effort at shooting his attacker down before he came too near, the oncoming warrior peeled his lips back from gritted, blackening teeth and shrieked in a voice that the huntsman knew only too well.
"Pathetic fool! There's no escape!"
Then Starscream, his armor glowing cherry red as the fire reached his fuel stocks, crashed into Scourge and seized him in a grip made unbreakable by his sheer fury. For a half second they stood optic to optic, Scourge's own armor starting to melt from the blazing heat. And then Starscream exploded, with such violence that there wasn't enough left of him, Scourge, or the structures immediately around them to, if you will pardon the expression, sweep up. Autobase Comsen, Iacon.
"Whoa!" Rumble cried as the mushroom cloud rose from the empty streets of Outer Altahex on the monitor.
"Well, that'll be Starscream showing Scourge what for, I expect," said Sylvie casually, glancing back over her shoulder to give Alexis what she hoped was a reassuring grin.
"No Cybertronian life signals now detectable in that sector,"
Soundwave reported. But, Sylvie was pleased to notice, he had enough tact to do so over the wire, not out loud. Damn, she thought. But there was too much work to do right now for her to dwell further on the matter.